Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. On this week's show, we'll take you to Montreal, Quebec, Fergus, Ontario, and Nova Scotia. University students stuck in Gaza missed the opening bell and speak out about Canada's delayed visa process. Two were killed while waiting.
I was accepted in November 2024. This was a big achievement for me. I living in a war zone. I still have hope, a dream to achieve.
This, as the city of Fergus welcomes its newest elementary school.
So what was your old school like?
It was just a bunch of red bricks and black bricks.
How do you feel about this new school? Is it exciting?
Yes.
A summer company program gives local teens practical experience as entrepreneurs.
A lot of skills have been learned. The program's helped me quite a bit. They have sessions and meetings to help you with filling out invoices, doing quotes, and it's made it a lot easier. It's a responsibility for sure through the program, but it's worth it.
The family of a murdered Caperton man faces the accused killer for the first time.
Emotions are high, but I did get to see Aaron Mickey. We got to be very careful what we say and what we don't say. Johnston was murdered on July 8th, 2024. September 2025. Trials not till 2027.
This and more stories on Viewpoints. Local news nationwide.
Okay, man, let's go.
Okay.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome again. Nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. It's back to school season, but for many university students, this is really not a time to rejoice. Over 70 Palestinian students waiting to attend university in Canada are still stuck in the Gaza Strip, waiting for the final approval of their study permits. Many of them have been waiting for 6 to 8 months to hear back from Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada regarding their study permits. Some have started to lose offers as a result of not getting them. And sadly, two students slated to come to Ontario's University of Waterloo this fall have been killed while waiting. Despite limited internet and electricity access in Gaza, two Concordia students who have been accepted and who are currently living in Gaza were able to connect with our journalist Adam Innes for interviews. Fatoum and Ahmad had their last names protected for personal security purposes. Adam also spoke with Dr. Ayman Ouida, chair of the board of the Palestinian Students and Scholars at Risk Network.
The Palestinian Students and Scholars at Risk Network, the PSSAR, is a group that works to help Palestinian academics safely continue or begin their studies. We spoke to the chair of the board of the PSSAR, Dr. Ayman Ouida.
You know, if we compare the situation to what happened in Ukraine and what continues to happen, Canada and many Western allies have shown a considerable amount of leadership when it comes to helping students who have been affected. And so I'll tell you, you know, clear examples that I've seen, which is that funding agencies came up, Canadian funding agencies came up with dedicated programs, pumped money into dedicated programs to attract Ukrainian students to come here and complete their studies. We haven't seen that level of leadership at all. Nothing compares to that level of leadership when it comes to the situation in Gaza.
Despite limited internet and electricity access in Gaza due to Israel's blockade and bombardment of infrastructure, two accepted Concordia students currently living in Gaza were able to connect with CJLO News. From the Gaza Strip, this is the voice of Fatoum.
My biggest dream is to continue my studies and turn that knowledge into a meaningful purpose, not just for myself, but also for my community and my country.
Fatoum was accepted by Concordia to pursue a PhD in software engineering back in February, but has heard very little about her student permit.
As war continues, we suffer more in terms of safety, getting our essential resources like drinking water, food, and also the closure of borders would not allow us to leave and continue our studies in Canada.
Another student, Ahmed, was accepted to Concordia for a master's program in information systems and has applied for a student permit. He has also been in limbo, waiting for a response from the IRCC. From Gaza, here's Ahmed.
I was accepted in November 2024, and this was a big achievement for me because I managed it while I living in a war zone, as you know, and with the very limited internet and electricity. Even if I'm living in a war zone and can't contribute in any meaningful thing right now in my situation, but I still have hope, still have a dream to achieve. I don't just sit down and let it go.
Representatives from Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada, the IRCC, would not provide an interview, but pointed to a statement explaining that each individual case is being processed, but is, quote, complex. With the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Representatives from Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada did not provide an interview, but pointed to a statement explaining that each individual case is being processed, but is complex. And at the other end of the country, the city of Burnaby in British Columbia is now the first city in Canada to call for an immediate arms embargo with Israel. On August 26, Burnaby City Council unanimously passed a motion which calls on Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley to advocate for the federal government to establish a full two-way arms embargo with Israel and to support the reunification of Gazan Canadian families. Journalist Danny Nisvadarani covered that story. Find his full report on frequencynews.ca.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
Thankfully, back to school day had a different ring for elementary students in Fergus, Ontario, attending classes in their newly built school. The Grand River Public School, located in the city's growing south end, will serve families in the storybook Beattie Hollow and surrounding neighborhoods. Principal Brent Eller says the building has innovative features to support modern learning. Students will enjoy flexible classroom spaces, a new learning common space, and eco-friendly design. Trying to go incognito, here's journalist Paul Harriet in Fergus, Ontario.
It's the first day of school at Grand River Public School, part of the Upper Grand District School Board, and excitement is in the air. The brand new building, funded in November 2021, was designed to meet the needs of families in the expanding neighborhoods of Storybrooke, Beattie Hollow, and nearby communities. After months of careful planning, including a finalized school boundary approved earlier this year, students are now stepping into a space designed for modern learning. Brent Eller, the school's first principal, says Grand River Public was built with innovation in mind.
There's some really neat things that you may not see from the ground. So it's got a reflective roof for one thing. It has an air source heat pump that I think does 90% of the heating and cooling in the building. The school layout itself is full of natural light. It's well laid out in terms of being able to see things supervision-wise. We have wonderful technology in every classroom. It's all sort of the new equipment in the board. We're well equipped. It's got a beautiful gym. The Learning Commons is a two-floor beautiful space with one whole wall, as you can see from the outside. There's a lot here, and it's a lot of thought went into the design of this building, and as a principal and someone who has to manage the space and kind of keep track of things, I couldn't think of a better design. So, and it's a beautiful layout on the outside as well.
Right. Among those features are open and flexible learning environments, energy-efficient designs, and community-driven spaces. Most families live within walking distance of the school, but school buses are also provided for students who live more than 1.6 kilometers away, particularly helpful for younger children. One of those young students is Graham, who's starting grade one this year. He shared what he thinks about his new school. So this is a really shiny new school. What do you think about that?
Good.
So what was your old school like?
a bunch of red bricks and black bricks.
So how do you feel that you're able to walk to school now instead of taking the bus?
Good.
Another voice of excitement comes from Leah, heading into senior kindergarten. Like many of her classmates, she's full of energy and looking forward to the school year. How do you feel about this new school? Is it exciting?
Yes.
Is this school bigger than your old school?
Yes.
And are you able to walk to school instead of, like, did you used to take the bus?
Yes, I used to take the bus.
But now you can walk to school. How do you feel about that?
I feel good.
The school also boasts a brand new learning common space, what might be referred to in the past as a library, a flexible and collaborative area designed to support both digital and traditional learning. Bilal Taha, Superintendent of Education at the Upper Grand District School Board, explains how this new space plays a central role in the school's design philosophy.
So it's what probably you and I, when we were kids, used to refer to as a library. So Learning Commons reflects the changing purpose of a library, including technology and coding and all of those pieces that come along with learning space.
And while Grand River Public School emerged as the final name, other options on the short list included Limestone Ridge, Riverbend, and Storybrooke, names that reflect the community's natural landscape and growing neighborhoods. As students settle in, educators, families, and school board officials alike are celebrating a fresh start and a bright future for elementary education in Fergus. I'm Paul Harriet, reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
You're tuned to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
We stay in Ontario, so how do you gain work experience when you never had a job? Well, for many young people, that is the obstacle that is hardest to overcome. Getting that first chance by starting up your own business is where the Ontario Summer Company Program comes into play. By giving youth a chance to confidently start and run their own business, student Beau Arnois, age 17, is one of them. He started up a clean force power washing in Haliburton this summer, thanks to the grant, which allowed him to purchase his equipment and learn all about the life of an entrepreneur. Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario, visited Harnois to learn more about his summer.
That's the sound of a power washer cleaning the dirt off the siding of Bill Glidden's Haliburton home. And the operator? Well, that's Beau Harnois, a 17-year-old Haliburton youth who spent his summer running his own business, thanks to funding from the provincial government. The grant program called Ontario Summer Company allows students age 15 to 29 to receive a grant of up to $3,000, receive hands-on coaching and business mentorship to start their own business. At a time when youth unemployment has risen to 31.4%, high school-age kids are having a tough time finding work, and Beau is thankful for the chance to learn and earn at the same time.
I run Clean Force Pressure Washing. I got started through the summer company program. Gave me a $1,500 grant up front, and then end of summer I get another $1,500. And with that initial fund, I just built my business, equipment, supplies, marketing, and slowly I got customers, social skills, networking skills, marketing skills. I've gotten, it's a lot easier communicating with people, more confident talking with people. I've learned how to quote properly doing measurements, except for today, I forgot my measuring tape.
But that happens.
Grown in many ways, a lot of skills have been learned. The program's helped me quite a bit. They have sessions and meetings to help you with filling out invoices, doing quotes, keeping track of my cash flow, you know, keeping track of my time. And it's made it a lot easier. It's a responsibility for sure through the program, but it's worth it.
Beau's parents helped him get the Ontario Summer Company grant through the Muskoka Small Business Center. Since his father runs his own business, Beau already was exposed to the life of an entrepreneur, but the program gave him real, practical experience.
Yeah, I've got experience in almost everything I need experience in now. Registered business, I need to get insured. I'm looking at quotes right now. Once I get my fall rest, I'm going to be all set. I have pretty much everything I need for a business. It's a lot to take in at first, but slowly it became more natural. Like, actually filling out invoices. I kept forgetting to fill out invoices at first. Cash grab, well, I'd forget the invoice, and I'd send an email afterwards and be like, I forgot to send an invoice, can I do that? It was just little things that were hard to learn. Cash flow, you know, that took me a while. I don't have experience in this at all. It was just a whole bunch all at once. They passed out lots of cards for me. They've gotten me plenty of jobs. I'm doing a ginormous job with my uncle. He got me a job with a mansion, new build. I'm going to make some good money off that. But my uncle and my dad and my dad's best friend all run businesses, as you can see on the truck. So they've been supportive. They've been helpful.
Bill Glidden, a family friend of the Harnois, originally helped handing out business cards for Beau, but soon realized he could use the help on his own home. Recent wildfires in the area have left a thick layer of dirt on his home's siding, so he was thrilled to hire Beau to make it sparkle once again. Glidden knows the difficulties youth face trying to find work without experience, so he was keen to provide an opportunity to Beau.
Well, I don't know Beau that well, but I know his family. Good family, hardworking, really honest. And I'm so pleased to hear a young person wanting to work. And an honest day's pay for an honest day's work isn't very common anymore. So if he's willing to do that, I'm willing to hire him, and no matter what, he'll do it. It'll be a good experience for him. Because it's so hard for young people to get experience when the first place they go to, they're asked if they've had experience. Well, I mean, it's not going to work unless someone gives them that chance. Just, I mean, it goes out on faith. His grandma came with him, and because I know them so well. And she said, here's some cards. Would you hand these out to people? Because he's starting a business. So I said, sure. And then I got in the house and I thought, you know, why don't I ask him to do something, because this house has needed it for years. I just really think he's a fine young fellow to be wanting to be an entrepreneur and start his own little business. This, and I just am so proud of any young person that does that, and I'm happy if I can be a little help to him.
Thanks to Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
The family of a murdered Cape Breton man has for the first time come face to face with one of the men accused of his killing. Aaron Curtis Mickey returned to the Sydney Supreme Court on September 2nd in person for the very first time since he was charged with the second-degree murder of North Sydney's Justin McDonald. McDonald went missing on July 7th, 2024, while his body had not been found at the time. The Cape Breton Regional Police ruled his death to be an homicide. On December 31st, 2024, they charged Mickey with second-degree murder, robbery, and firearms-related charges. Ryan Joseph Pike is also charged with second-degree murder and robbery in the case, while Mitchell George McPhee faces a charge of manslaughter. Tensions were high outside the courtroom as McDonald's family and supporters waited to face the man accused of killing him. Here's Jacob Postlewaite in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia.
The family of a murdered Cape Breton man have come face to face with one of the men accused for the very first time. Ken McDonald described how it felt to see the man accused of killing his son.
Emotions are high, but I did get to see Aaron Mickey. Mm-hmm. So again, we got to be very careful what we say and what we don't say. We're moving forward. Emotionally, it's.
Aaron Curtis Mickey returned to Sydney Supreme Court on Tuesday in person for the very first time since he was charged with the second-degree murder of North Sydney's Justin McDonald. McDonald went missing on July 7th, 2024. While his body had not been found at the time, Cape Breton Regional Police ruled his death a homicide, and on December 31st of 2024 charged Mickey with second-degree murder, robbery, and firearms-related charges in relation to McDonald's death. McDonald's remains were later found by his family on May 5th, 2025, who had continued to search areas connected to his disappearance. Ryan Joseph Pike is also charged with second-degree murder and robbery in the case, while Mitchell George McPhee faces a charge of manslaughter. All three men are currently being held in remand and have been appearing in court by video as they make their way towards trial. That changed in late August when, during a routine court status update, the three men charged began to communicate amongst themselves over video during the court proceedings. Supreme Court Justice Shane Russell called on the three men to pay attention and was met with expletives and shouting from Mickey, who has been unable to secure legal representation since his arrest in December. As a result of his outburst, Mickey was ordered to appear in court in person going forward, with Russell looking to hold him in contempt of court. Tensions were high outside the courtroom on Tuesday as McDonald's family and supporters waited to face the man accused of killing him. They watched as Mickey was led into the courtroom. All were dressed in purple, and Ken McDonald explained why.
Justin's favorite color was purple. Because back to, I guess, he was born Donny Osmond days, but he's, he always loved his purple. And so everybody represents here with his purple. No matter what they do, they represent us.
However, with a month having passed after Mickey's outburst, both sides have had the chance to cool off. Russell told the court he had received assurances from Mickey that he would not cause further disruptions and drop the contempt of court finding against him. Lawyers for the Crown are currently looking to join the three men's cases into one trial. They've submitted a joinder application, which is opposed by lawyers representing Ryan Pike and Mitchell McPhee. Ken McDonald wants to see the three men tried together.
I'd like to see them tried all in one. Yeah, they're all guilty.
With the anniversary of the three men's arrests fast approaching, Russell set tentative trial dates on Tuesday. Pike had previously been scheduled to stand trial from February 10th to March 3rd, 2027. Russell set dates for trial for McPhee and Mickey from January 18th to February 5th, 2027, and May 31st to June 18th, 2027, respectively. Ken McDonald spoke about the toll the long process of moving through the court system to trial is having on the family.
So here we are here. This is Justin was murdered on July 8th, 2024. September 2025. Trial's not till 2027.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, you know, we only just put Justin to rest in June.
Yeah.
This is reliving it. We were warned that this is going to happen, and it was going to happen. But it's just going through it. You don't expect it to happen. It's just a delay, delay, delay. And but again, I guess the court has to do a process. And I guess I'm very lucky because we have a good Supreme Court sitting, and he's a no-nonsense Supreme Court. He set the rule and he set the law, and we're going to follow what he has to say.
He also expressed his gratitude to everyone who supported the family.
As a community and as a family, we are so beyond appreciative of what we have, because we're above and beyond. We're above and beyond of the community, because it's across everywhere, right?
McDonald says they will continue to show up to court and fight for Justin's memory. The case will return to court on October 14th for a status update. I'm Jacob Postlewaite.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrim, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Lighter note, we take you to Nova Scotia, where a popular fundraiser for Liverpool's Queen's General Hospital is back, and organizers hope it will be bigger than ever this September. People will be able to go to the hospital hustle in person for the first time since before the pandemic. The last online version of the fundraiser was held in 2021. This year's return to a more traditional hustle will be the 42nd year of the event. The hustle will be held at the Liverpool Curling Club on September 13. The goal this year is to raise at least $20,000, more with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Stephanie McKenzie is the co-chair of the 2025 Queen's General Hospital Hustle. The last time the fundraiser was held was an online version in 2021.
The Hospital Hustle is just the community getting together to raise funds for equipment, extra equipment at our hospital. It was an annual event for 40 years. until 2019. It's been a labor of love for us to try to bring it back, and we, you know, we want to make sure that everybody knows it's back, because it is something that a lot of people look forward to.
The Hustle this year will be held at the Liverpool Curling Club on September 13th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's organized by the Queen's General Hospital Auxiliary, which also runs the hospital's gift shop. Mackenzie says the popular yard sale style setup will return, along with food served by local Kiwanis Club members and doctors from the hospital. And nurses will be on hand to perform checkups on the little ones' dolls or teddy bears.
And we'll have baked goods for you to buy and take home as well, and preserves, and all the normal tables that we have with jewelry and books and the big white elephant table, all the things we normally have. But we're also having a craft table this year. We'll have new to you crafts. It's hoped to be a family event and a lot of fun for the community, but an important fundraising event for the hospital.
Organizers are also planning a silent and live auction on the day of the Hustle at the Curling Club. And for the first time, there will be an online Facebook auction set to begin on September 2nd with items donated by local businesses. All money raised this year will go toward buying a special cardiac monitor and a linear probe for the hospital's new echocardiogram machine. Mackenzie says they hope to raise at least $20,000.
In most of the recent years, we've raised $20,000 or more.
They have about 30 volunteers helping out this year, but Mackenzie says they could always use more.
Where we really need volunteers is on September the 7th. We are moving all of the treasures that have been donated to and are stored at Milton Hall to the Curling Club.
Anyone who wants to volunteer at this year's Hospital Hustle or donate any auction or sale items can email organizers at queenshospitalhustle@gmail.com. And if you want to participate in the online auction beginning Tuesday, search for the Facebook group 2025 Queens County Hospital Hustle Online Auction. I'm Rick Conrad.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
That's it for this episode of Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists Adam Innes, Paul Harriet, Elizabeth Oakley, Jacob Postlewaite, and Rick Conrad. National editors are Conrad Fox and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks for being with us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.